morning. I want to call the Texas Commission on Fire Protection Commissioners meeting to order July the 12th, 2018 at 9 a.m.
Item 1, call to order, presentation of colors, pledge of allegiance, and invocation.
Everybody stand, please.
Join me in the pledge to the United States flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Join me in the pledge to the Texas flag.
Honor the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Chaplain Jeremy Van Delinder, please.
Thank you, sir. Let's pray together. Our gracious God and Father, we come to you thankful this morning for your many gifts to us. Sometimes we take notice of those gifts, and at other times, Lord, they pass us by without our notice. Forgive us for that. This morning, Lord, we are thankful for the great state and the great country in which we live. As we've just been reminded of, we are thankful for the blessings that we enjoy by living both in this state and in the United States. We are thankful, Lord, for those who offer themselves, even this morning, as the stewards of the good things that you have given us, for those who serve as watchmen over their fellow man, and as they serve others, serve you as well. Lord, this morning we pray for your richest blessing on the affairs that will take place in the coming moments and hours. We pray for your care for the commissioners, for those in this room who are observing the proceedings. We pray for wisdom in the deliberations that will take place. Father, we ask you for a gracious and united spirit as discussions move forward. And then, Lord, that the outcomes will be helpful, that they will be profitable for our great state. Lord, now we offer this time to you with thanksgiving. We thank you for the opportunity that you've given us even today to give you praise. And we offer these things with respect to people of all faith in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please be seated. Our honor guard today was from the San Antonio Fire Department. Please thank them for their duty here.
Item two, roll call. Tommy Anderson?
Here.
Carlos Cortez? Absent.
Absent.
Kelly Doster?
Present.
Joseph Gonzalez?
Here.
Mike Jones?
Here.
John McMakin?
Here.
Robert Moore?
Here.
Bob Morgan?
Absent.
Absent. Leonardo Perez? Here. Mala Sharma?
Absent.
J.P. Stillman?
Here.
Steve Tall?
Here.
And Tyree Whitlock?
Absent.
We have a quorum, sir.
Item three,
adoption of the commission meeting minutes of April 25th, 2018, and April 26th, 2018.
Move to adopt.
We have a motion, Commissioner Doster.
Second.
We have a second, Commissioner Tull, to adopt the minutes from the April meeting. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item four.
Item four, the Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on July 12, 2018 during the commission meeting and provide a report for discussion and possible action relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee, including but not limited to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plan.
Do we have any report from the committee?
I do have one quick question on budget.
Yes, sir.
Tim, can you talk about the overages related to indirect cost on other personnel costs, indirect administration, fire department standards?
1002.
Yep. Budget 1002.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll pass it to Servano and just let you know how we're managing that.
Those overages were done by payouts when we had two employees retire, which weren't foreseen when this budget was originally forecasted. However, given those overages, they can be covered by the other sections that we have.
We'll be able to transfer funds within.
I see you're going to do an internal budget amendment and move it over there. And you feel like you have that in those other lines?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Any other questions on the budget? All right. Item five.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to the organizational purposes, functions, and objectives, including but not limited to the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
All right, do I have a representative from the Texas Fire Chiefs Association?
Morning. Mike Wisco. I'm filling in for Betty, who's on vacation this week. Quick report from the fire chiefs. We just completed our most recent fire chief academy, 27 graduates. We've added an EMS track to the program now, brought about an additional 30 or so people to the class. Next one will be in Garland in October. Second thing, we have partnered with Fire Engineering to host and to sponsor the fourth annual Line of Duty Death Conference. That'll be held in October in Hearst, so we're looking forward to that new partnership. We continue to offer the company officer symposiums. They just awarded the 17th and 18th best practices recognition to two departments out there, and there are several more working on theirs. And We're working with our other fire service partners on some legislative issues, getting ready for next year. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Glenda Shields with the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Got a real quick report. Our biannual international convention is coming up in a couple of weeks. It's going to be held in Seattle. A whole bunch of people will be there. Basically working on legislation and stuff for the upcoming session, you know, mostly involving workers' comp and some other stuff. But y'all have my number if y'all need to talk to me. Thanks.
The State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Good morning. Chris Barron, the Executive Director with the State Firefighters Fire Marshal Association. Just quick report also. We just finished our annual conference in Arlington, Texas. Had a whopping 699 participants involved with it. We also are now involved with the Municipal Fire School, with the annual Spanish Fire School, Industrial School, and Municipal School in the coming weeks, along with TEKS. And lastly, I'm going to encourage you, I don't know if I will be here due to another commitment for the inspector issue, but on behalf of our association, we really would appreciate you take a hard look at this issue. I know you will hear from numerous people on it, and hopefully we can resolve it and keep firefighters safer than what they are right now. Thank you.
The Texas Fire Marshals Association.
Good morning, Lori Christensen, President, Texas Fire Marshals Association. Have a lot going on with the association. First, want to put a plug in for our October conference. This year is going to be October 15th through the 19th. We've got some great speakers. We're bringing in some of the lead responders, Sergeant Clarkson and Chief Wersinski from Clark County on the Mandolin Bay active shooter incident, to tell us a little bit more about how we can prepare for those type of events with our partners. The week of October 6th, we will be partnering with Harris County to we are partnering with Harris County to present NFPA 3000, a training session on that through NFPA. That is the newest it's the only active shooter hostile event standard that has been put out there. NFPA, this is a provisional standard that was put out second time in the 126-year history. They've put something out this quickly. It involved not only the fire service, law enforcement, ATF, and several other state, federal, and international agencies to put this together. It's a preparedness document for preparedness, response, and recovery. In addition, August 28th through the 29th, the Fire Marshals Association will be hosting significant updates for the ICC, and will also be hosting a fireworks training session. That's August 28th, 29th in Kerrville, Texas. I attended the International Fire Marshals Association meeting at the National Fire Protection Association Conference in June. I was able to bring back some good information, changes that are upcoming on several standards, including food trucks and the NFPA 1031 standard. Brought that back, and we'll be tracking some of the things going on there. I'm also have been elected to the board of IFMA, and we'll be able to continue bringing back to the state of Texas information on the national level. Something else that we're doing, we're actively tracking the legislative session. Testified 2 weeks ago regarding school safety. I think it's important that we as fire marshals, fire service, get involved in the school safety initiative. Obviously, a lot of things are going to be changing in our schools and things like that. So we're trying to track that and see how we can be involved and offer up our training and skill set. In addition, we have been notified that fireworks will be looking for year-round sales. So we're going to track that and actively participate in those discussions. And anything else, we're always open to any other agencies or associations that would like us to partner with them on legislative initiatives. Any questions?
I have one.
Yes, sir.
You're working closely with the governor's office and that 40 point Three-point plan?
What happened was I was invited for testimony. It was an invited testimony under Representative Huberty's, which is the School Safety Education Committee. And what we did is I went in and testified regarding the NFPA 3000 standard and the fact that NFPA is the acceptable standard for school inspections, school buildings, as well as ICC. So went in there and talked about that. But as far as we are not on the 40-point plan committee list, that was just invited testimony.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Texas Association of Fire Educators. Texas A&M Forest Service. National Fire Protection Association. Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan of Cedar Park Fire Department. I'm the current chair for the Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Our participants range from civilian and analysts, administrative battalion chiefs, and fire chiefs from fire departments of all sizes across the state. We are in the process of compiling comparative response time data for our NIT members, some of our previous programming, including an online class on how to use Words and Listen Excel on May 15th. Our next in-person meeting is scheduled in Southlake on the afternoon of August 7th, which is free to attend with free lunch. Lunch will be provided, and guest speakers will include representatives from Dallas Fire Rescue Research Division, National Fire Protection Association, and Center for Public Safety Excellence. On the next day at Fire Rescue International, the Commission on Fire Accreditation International will be holding their fall hearings. Frisco and Amarillo are slated to be the 7th and 8th civilian fire departments in Texas to be accredited on the first day of hearings. Three Department of Defense fire agencies in Texas have already obtained accredited status as well. In regards to future training activities, Frisco Fire Department will be hosting the basic accreditation course in October 2018. In addition, the Center for Public Safety Excellence is looking for qualified peer assessors to support the accreditation process, and the next online course is offered in October. Beginning in the fall, we'll begin facilitating mock standards of cover presentations to allow departments to receive feedback from their peers, with San Antonio and Cedar Park due up first. On a personal note, today will be my last meeting that I'll be affiliated with Cedar Park Fire Department, as I will be joining Houston Fire Department in a similar role effective this coming Monday. I do intend to continue attending these meetings and working with you in the future. Thank you for your time, and I'm willing to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you, sir. And good luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you, sir.
State Fire Marshal's Office. Item number 6.
Discussion and possible action concerning reports by the Commission representative to the Texas Fire School Advisory Board and by representatives of the Texas Engineering Extension Service, TEEKS, regarding fire protection training provided by TEEKS through its Emergency Service Training Institute.
Good morning, Commissioners. Everybody in attendance. My name is Juan Gloria with the McAllen Fire Department. And on previous meetings, I had reported of all the planning that was taking place in preparation for the annual schools that we have at the fire field. Currently this week, we started this last Monday with Spanish School, the international school, in which we have very close to 400 students. Wow. That are attending 18 different courses. And so school is going full speed at this point in time. We're getting ready to deploy our training action plan for industrial school next week, starting Monday. Right now, pre-registration, they have 668 students registered. That's not counting the walk-ins. And they're offering 20 different courses. And the following week after that, we're looking at a pre-registration of 1,502 students currently for Municipal Fire School. And they're offering 34 different courses. So things are looking pretty good for Municipal School right now as it stands through pre-registration. We do have some new pilot programs that are going on, that are taking place. They're flowing pretty good so far. As everything, there's always opportunity to further polish them for 2019, and that is going to be ongoing work that is going to take place in the months to come. The new projects there, that we had talked about that were under construction in prior months and prior years are completed. Some of those are already being implemented through the array of different courses that I mentioned throughout the three different schools. So basically, at this point in time, is we can consider this as game time, and we'll provide you with an update, you know, on our next meeting. Another activity in which TICS is assisting, which is specific of the Rio Grande Valley, is in September 30th, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, they will be assisting in conducting the second annual South Texas Firefighters Safety and Wellness Summit. Without the TICS assistance, you know, programs like that would not be possible. That is a completely free of charge conference. It's a four-day conference being put together for all first responders in partnership with the Proactive Education for Emergency Responders Organization and the RGVFFMA. And so I believe they're coming pretty close to putting that information out. We hope that word spreads out throughout the state to get, you know, more firefighters to attend. They will be having great speakers and great activities going on. So TICS is a part of that operation. Other than that, I'm done with my report, and I'm willing to entertain any questions that you may have.
Any questions?
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Item number 7.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from Commission's representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Homeland Security Council had a meeting on May 2nd, 2018 at the Criminal Law Enforcement Center at DPS campus. And one of the two main presentation topics that were presented that day was Dr. Joe McKinnon from the Texas School Safety Center. And they discussed recent developments in safety school initiatives, specifically related to school districts, community college, and having to submit their safety plans related to what the Texas School Safety Center does, the audits on all school safety plans. And one of the things that they've been tasked with recently through legislation is being the primary organization that does outreach to schools and school districts related to safety plans and helping them make sure that each one of them has an emergency action plan and emergency management type plan for the school district. They also audit those. They also have training opportunities, online courses, and online tool kits for school districts to help develop programs across the state. Second presentation was Dr. Mike Lauderdale, UT Austin, and his presentation was interesting, related to political, economic, and social dynamics in the country of Mexico and what that potential impacts are for Texas. And there's some eye-opening presentation there related to crime, increase in crime in Mexico. 2017, as he said, saw the highest number of homicides ever in the country of Mexico. So increased instability, which can turn present direct threats into Texas in the form of border-related violence, mass migration, and economic disruption. So those are pretty interesting presentation, as Tim will relate to that as well as he were there. And then discussion items of 2018 Texas Threat and Hazard Identification Risk Assessment, that's called THIRA. All of those version 3s were presented and approved, and we will start that process again in December for State Preparedness Report, SPR, and the THIRA will begin again in our October meeting, and we'll be prepared to present that to the Governor's Office in January. Airport security workshops. The Office of Homeland Security has coordinated and planned to deliver two Texas airport landside security workshops in Midland and one in Amarillo later in the fall. So with that, the next meeting is, I think, July 31st, I believe.
I think that's right.
End of report.
Any questions? Item number 8.
New matters from the commission, staff, or public, which may be discussed at future commission meetings.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to recommend or suggest that we take a look at our public relations outreach to the public. If we could put that on like a work session in the coming future.
Okay, public relations. Any discussion on that? Any other new matters? Any other new matters? Hearing none. Item number 10.
Nine. Discussion and possible action on future meeting dates.
So we have at this point
October 25th.
October 25th.
Yeah.
And as it stands right now, there was apparently a change in the facility commission process for reserving this room. And it looks like, at least for right now, we're back to having to wait to within 90 days before we're able to reserve the room again. So with that said, we're not able to reserve it out for the year at this point. I haven't had a chance to visit with them yet to see if we can't get an exemption from that, but for the time being, we're not able to.
So currently, do we have this room for the 25th?
For October,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is, going into next year. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But December, we can't reserve it yet.
I think we should be able to look at some dates in the October meeting for the January meeting. But it looks like it won't be able to be before that. We won't be able to look at it before that. And hopefully I'll have been able to have a conversation with them between now and then and convince them that we really would like to be able to try to plan out for the year if we possibly can.
It's going to be at 9 or 10 a.m.?
10.
The October 10. Meeting would be at 10.
It'd be 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that says we have to have the meetings in this room, or is there a specific reason of why we always have the meetings here?
I think as much as anything, it's a matter of convenience and availability, but no, there's nothing that says we have to.
Okay.
That I'm aware of. Is there anything that, as long as it's announced,
your travel costs,
an appropriate amount of time.
Okay. Any other discussion on future meeting dates? Okay, hearing none, item number 10.
Matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to A, discussion and possible final adoption of proposed amendments, new sections, and repeals as follows. 1, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to Title 37 TAC, Chapter 433, Driver/Operator.
This will be for discussion and possible final adoption.
Yes.
Morning.
Morning, Commissioner. Mike Wisco, Chairman of the Firefighter Advisory Committee. I guess I'll start off by making y'all aware that there's been some changes. Jim Reedy, after 11 great years as our chairman, has decided to step aside. He's going to remain as a committee member, but he's not going to serve as the chairman any longer. By default, they got stuck with me because I was the assistant presiding officer. We elected Daniel DeYeer to be the new assistant presiding officer, and Keith Schmidt from Gonzales is going to be our secretary. So a few changes there. One more change in the future that we're aware of is Mato Cano from McAllen has informed us at our last meeting that he would be retiring at the end of our September meeting. So we'll have yet another new face before the end of the year. 433 is for final adoption. Basically, all that happened, the language that was allowing personnel to challenge the driver operator exam that existed until May the 18th is being removed. That's the only change in this one.
Move for final adoption.
Second. Okay, we have a motion. Commissioner Tull seconded. Who seconded? For final adoption. Any discussion?
A question for Tim on this. I know a lot of people doing last minute appeals.
To say the least.
Are they going to be granted an opportunity, or are they lost out if they didn't test before then?
No, we actually allowed people who had submitted applications to test. We pushed it beyond that hard deadline to allow those folks who already had that to us to be able to go ahead and test.
So anybody that applied on May 18th or before will be allowed to finish?
We gave everybody as much opportunity as we felt like we could, yes.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 10A2, discussion of possible action regarding proposed amendments to Title 37 TAC, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety.
Commissioners, you had sent some proposed language for us to look at. We spent a great deal of time reviewing this and listening to some testimony. It would appear that we have a problem across the state that there are some departments who may not be adhering to 1851 like we have prescribed in our rules. We took a look at the proposed language. It is the committee's opinion that what was proposed would serve to complicate the rule but wouldn't resolve the issue at hand. So you should have in front of you some alternate language that we have submitted. Essentially what we did is we kept what we felt were the effective pieces of that. We added one more piece and we deleted the rest of it. So I'd like to explain what we kept and what we added. The first thing that you'll see is in red, it says the number three, maintain, provide to the commission annually or upon request and comply with. And what that's in reference to is each department's SOP on 1851 and how they're going to comply with it. The current rule alludes to that you're supposed to comply with it, but it didn't say it. We felt that it may be effective to have comply with in there. We had a big discussion on whether the commission gets to see every department's SOP. We had some testimony from at least one department that their personnel have never seen an SOP related to this. They have concerns that their gear is not being cleaned the way it should be. While we believe most organizations do have an SOP, and from personal experience, I can tell you that my inspector, when he comes in, asks to see our SOP, gets to see it, and we look at it together and make changes as needed. Apparently, that may not be the case in everybody. So what we've suggested here, in talking to Tim and the staff, is that annually, every department be required to submit that SOP, and it be available. And I'll let Tim elaborate on that a little bit if he wants to. But that's the gist of the proposal that we're sending back. Those are the two changes we want to make. That it says you have to comply with 1851, and you have to submit a copy annually to the agency.
Questions?
question.
Sure.
Chief, so again, we're taking the recommended language that was originally is now not the recommended language. Is that correct? So we're only looking at adding on number three, those five words in red, and then comply with?
Yes.
That's it. So none of this language, which was more or less reiterating 1851, you're just taking that out from the original recommendation, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Then we've got some other recommendations that aren't in here and we can discuss, and we're up here. I mean, I'll answer any questions or I can go on, but I think it's an important matter in front of us, but the committee didn't feel that just reiterating what 1851 said was going to be effective. It was just going to add about 10 pages to the rule book, and that was it.
Can we adopt this? Can we do a final adoption or something with that much dramatic change?
It may be public.
With changes.
Yeah, everybody's had an opportunity to comment and input.
Okay.
What kind of input did you have?
We had a significant amount from the State Association of Firefighters and from the Houston Firefighters Local 341. Apparently there are some concerns in Houston that there is not an SOP on this, nor are they adhering to it. I believe now there's actually an investigation underway by the agency, but you know, there's reports of gear that goes a whole year without being cleaned. So it's getting cleaned annually when it gets inspected, but it's not being cleaned as needed. If you look at 1851, it speaks to that. We clearly cannot require every department out there to have a gear extractor, dryer, or 15 of them, or however many we may feel they need. We can't require that, but 1851 is pretty clear that when the gear gets soiled or is dirty, it needs to be cleaned, and that annually it's going to be inspected. To inspect it, it has to be cleaned first, and it sounds as though what's going on in some departments, they're just sending it for that annual inspection. It accidentally gets cleaned in the process, and they put it back on the street. That does not seem to comply with what we put in 435. A point that was made by our committee was that maybe we need to attack this from an educational standpoint, in that maybe not everybody out there understands still today, after 12 years, what 1851 is, what it says, what it means, and how it's to be imposed. Led to a variety of other comments, but at our next meeting, we're most likely going to have CE on our agenda to discuss the possibility of taking hot-button issues like 1851 or traffic safety or life safety initiatives or something, and be able to require 4 hours towards something like this. And we're going to take a look at that. I'm not saying that's what we're going to do, but we probably need to attack this from the educational side as much as we do from the rulemaking side. You know, it's the 1851 and recommended SOP language is available on the website. Some will tell you it's not easy to find. I know the agency's working on their website, and everybody's always got a better idea how that can look. But maybe we need to do a better job of educating the firefighters out there what it is and how to comply with it. And so that was just one other suggestion that we had that we're going to look at next time.
Is your committee unanimous on this?
Yes.
Well, with that, I'll move for final adoption.
Second.
With one amendment too, that if you would, I'd like for staff as well as maybe Firefighter Advisory Committee to come up with a sample SOP for this specific regulation that departments could look at and use as a sample document to what we're looking for.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the recommended changes with the caveat that staff comes up with a sample SOP template.
Yes.
For departments to use. Do I hear a second?
Second.
We have a second, Commissioner Jones. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
10A to me. Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to Title 37 TAC, Chapter 439, examinations for certifications.
Again, Commissioners, this is for final adoption. There are some changes that update the language to bring it more in line with the current system and practices. There are also some areas where some language has been added to address issues encountered by the staff or during inspections of training programs. Most of the changes you'll find are in 439.7 or 439.9.
Move for final adoption. Second.
Do we have a motion? Commissioner Tull. Second, Commissioner Stillman. To move for final adoption. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A. Overview course instructor information sheet, curriculum outline and reference list for new fire and life safety educator 2. And item B. Updates to overview course instructor information sheet, curriculum outline and reference list for Fire and Life Safety Educator 1.
Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Wilson. I'm the former Curriculum Development Specialist and the new Public Information Officer. I'm taking over for Mark. But for today, I'll pretend. Still the Curriculum Development Specialist. For Fire and Life Safety Educator 2, that's a brand new certification. We already have Level 1 up on our website, and we've started giving exams and things, but Level 2 is brand new. So we have the standard curriculum documents for you to look at. We have the overview page, which basically is just informing people that this is a voluntary certification and there won't be a formal curriculum. So there's that, and then the definition of what a Fire and Life Safety Educator 2 is. And then on the next page, page 52, we have the course instructor information, which explains how the NFPA standard is broken down. And like, for example, with the requisite knowledge, that's where you're going to get the written test questions. And with the requisite skills, that's where we have the performance skills when it's time for state certification. And then various chapters in the standards manual that the course instructor should be aware of. Page 54, we have the curriculum outline, which indicates the total recommended hours for this course, which is 48 hours. And then we have the reference list. So that's for level 2. Would you like me to do them both? Level 1? Okay. So for level 1, we just have a few updates. Because the Curriculum and Testing Committee was looking at Level 2, they wanted to compare it to Level 1, and so they started to get into how this one could be updated and made a little bit better. So for the most part, you're not really going to see, but on the headers and the footers in the curriculum manual, you needed to add like a number 1 to Fire and Life Safety Educator 1 and things like that. The most significant change you'll see on page 56, the definition of a Fire and Life Safety Educator 1, they made just a few edits there, really to bring it more in line with the language in the NFPA standard in 1035. But everything else remains the same. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
All right, thank you, Grace.
Grace, in terms of effective date, I think we're thinking January 1 would be appropriate for both of these?
Correct. Yes.
and I believe you'll be seeing rule language, proposed rule language for Life Safety Educator 2 in your October meeting to be adopted in your January meeting, so it should kind of dovetail together.
All right. Thank you. Any movement need to be made on this?
I think you need to vote to adopt it. Yeah.
Make a motion to adopt the information for Educator 1 and 2.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt Educator 1 and 2. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, item 11.
Discussion and possible action on the 2017 data collected regarding firefighter injuries and the development of recommendations to be submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office for inclusion in its annual report.
So, Commissioners, I know you had the opportunity yesterday to have a look at the injury report, and at this point, really, what we're needing to make sure we have leaving today is, or whatever recommendations you want included to the Texas Fire Service in the report for the end of the report. And once we have those, then we'll include those in the report, and it'll get submitted to the Fire Marshal's Office.
Okay, in front of you, you have notes, I guess, from the Injury Report Committee meeting that was held on July the 11th. Commissioner Anderson chaired that committee. Do you have any comments?
Yes, sir. The committee met, as you said, yesterday morning. And we tried to come up with ways that we could get the firefighters more involved in the report. A lot of them probably don't ever see the report, and that's important that they do get to see that information. What we're going to try to do is come up with a quarterly topic. Maybe back strains or something of that nature, and list a little more in-depth explanation of how some of the injuries occurred, so that hopefully a firefighter could develop a way to prevent doing the same thing and get them a little more involved. We talked about a survey, sending out a survey to the department saying, you know, is there something specific that the report's not doing, or is it doing okay? What can we do to make it more, I guess, exciting to the firefighter?
Useful.
So this is the list that you have in front of you. There was some discussion about the cancer reporting not being a part of the report, and that's kind of we're kind of tied there on the legislative side of things that what the report can do. The quarterly topic could be done with Facebook posts, public websites, things of that nature. And then, as I said, definitions to clarify descriptions of the injuries, what happened, and try to give them a little more information. We gather the information. It's just a matter of getting it distributed to the departments. There was some discussion about do you need more information on the incidents, like the time of day, the maybe weather conditions, things of that nature. That was pretty much discussed and said that we do have the time of day. That's not a a problem to do those type of things. There was also discussed about maybe getting a statistician to look at the report and see what they could come up with that would be a, they read things a little differently than we do. They look at statistics every day. They might could come up with a little better layout of what it's trying to do. And then Daniel DeGeer was not able to be at the meeting, but he discussed with me, and I thought was a good idea. That, and I think Mike Wisco touched on it. Chief said something about CE hours and picking subjects that would tie into this report that would say, okay, back strains, we're going to do a 2-hour CE on that this year instead of, you know, kind of like what he had discussed is along those same lines. And we're going to get back together later on in the year and see how this is fitting together and what kind of information we have to look at and try to make it more more appealing and more useful, because it's a sin to have this much data and people not use it, because it is some very good stuff. I believe the advisory committee has some key factors, if you want to hear them, about things that we could turn in as you know, to the fire marshal's office that would be key factors of some of the report information.
Mike Wisco, Firefighter Advisory Committee. Well, we looked at this report. I mean, clearly, it's a fantastic report. We've seen it now for 7 or 8 years. The staff does a great job with it. The general consensus of our committee, Tim asked us to make some recommendations, and you know, we've been kicking this around now and looking at it for 7 or 8 years. I think it's time to buckle down and start addressing some of these. I think that was the point. A very valid point that was made. I haven't heard it yet. We've got over 30,000 certified firefighters out there, and this report shows a mere 4,000 injuries. That's pretty remarkable right there. So we don't have this overwhelming problem, but what we do see is every year we're seeing the same injuries again and again, and you see that in this report. To a big part of this, we feel it's time for the departments to take ownership in this. One, they need to see this report. Somehow or another, we need to get it to them so they see it. They know what injuries they're reporting. They know what their most frequently occurring injuries are. So the recommendations from us would be that the departments start reviewing this and begin addressing those. If their injuries are sprains and strains, they need to get a little more aggressive on their continuing education to prevent that. If they're burn related, if they're station duties or apparatus maintenance related injuries, they need to take a look within their organization, figure out what's causing this and how they can fix it. So we don't feel all the responsibilities on the agency. The agency does a hell of a job putting this report together. Somehow or another, it's not getting out there. We need to make sure it gets out there, and then they need to own it and start addressing their internal issues. And if we do that through some required CE or more emails or sending a report through FIDO, I don't know what the final answer is, but it's time for the departments to take some ownership in this and start addressing their problems, because we see the same categories every year, and you don't really see a change.
Chief Wisco.
Yes, sir.
I agree with you 100% in so much that I think that when you bring on an applicant or a rookie firefighter, that number one, he has the right to know that he doesn't have to die in the fire service. But in regard to taking ownership, that is a fire officer or firefighter, rather, just like a police officer, needs to understand that that is their responsibility from the get-go. And if they've got a skull can outlined in their left rear pocket, they need to address that, or if they smoke two packs a day or whatever it is, you know, health issues or whatever. But I think they almost need to sign a pledge so that they, you know, when something happens 10, 15 years from now, they, you can say, well, looky here, we tried to get you to do this, and it's a human nature problem, I think, in terms of some people buy into it immediately and accept it and live with it, and other people just say, you know, but you're spot on in terms of getting the, you know, the individual firefighter and the department to buy into, otherwise it doesn't mean anything.
Well, I guess the main thing in our meeting yesterday that I brought up is I think that, yeah, we gather a lot of great documentation. There's no doubt about that. But we need to make this report more user-friendly or, you know, report a little deeper in if you have all of these back injuries, well, what's the primary cause of the back injuries? What occurred to cause these our firefighters to become injured, so that our department can take a look at that and make sure their firefighters aren't doing the same exact thing and they've just been lucky that they haven't had an injury in that regard. So I just think there needs to be a little more information on how the injuries occurred. You know, we say station duties. Well, that's a very broad category, station duties. Well, what are we seeing in station duties? You know, basically the top three station duties that are causing our firefighters to become injured. And then maybe they could take a look at it and say, okay, well, we can protect them from this.
Yes, sir. And I think that's where the quarterly information, top 10 problems or whatever, can be implemented in that as a one-page safety talk or whatever you want to call it. So I think they're going to work on that a little bit.
Okay. We do capture a lot more information than what you actually see in the report. The report really is kind of a summary, if you will, of what's been going on. So it'll be easy enough, say, on a quarterly basis with an injury update type of thing, where we do a little bit more of a deep dive into one particular thing, and we can provide more detail to folks out there.
And Tommy, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
See, going back with the cancer reports and the surgery, can you kind of elaborate for me, since I wasn't in the meeting, of where the hands are tied? Because if you look at the Texas Government Code 605.055 and .056, it takes basically heart attack, strokes, and cancer as presumptive of workers' comp injuries.
Right.
So if I twist a knee, it's a workers' comp injury.
I'll let Tim refer to that.
I hadn't seen information that called those injuries. If it is, then that may alter what we've been doing. But that's been my concern all along, that, you know, looking at 419, again, I know I'm a broken record here. I'm urging a lot of caution in where we go with illnesses and those types of things, medical conditions, those sorts of things. 419.048 does not address that type of thing at all. So, again, if there's other statute that can be factored into this, then I would encourage the commissioners to look at that.
Yeah, particularly 607.055 and .056.
Mr. DeShields?
Glenn DeShields with the State Association of Firefighters. 419-022 gives the commission general powers, requires the submission of reports and information by a local governmental agency in this state that employs fire protection personnel. So under 419-022, the commission at any time could ask for any report, I would assume, from a fire department that employed fire protection personnel. We generally consider injuries and illnesses similar because, I mean, they're both filed under worker comp claims. So if we have a cancer and it's done under 607, that's just a presumptive statute, but it's still a worker's comp claim. So there's no difference between that and any other worker comp claim where if you sprain your ankle or break your leg, it's still the same process and it's a worker's comp injury or illness. I assume that some things could be considered, if we're going to define injuries and illness and say they're separate, they're both caused by being employed as a firefighter. So, and they're both compensable under workers' comp. So, I mean, but 419-022 would definitely give the commission, in my opinion, the ability to ask for any report from a local fire department. But that was what I'd come up with, but maybe someone else knows something else about it. Thank you.
I forgot one recommendation that the committee had, and I apologize, but we seem to always get this report in April or May, and we're rushed to make some recommendations before we send it on to the state fire marshal's office. So an idea we had, which Chief Anderson and his committee started yesterday, was to maybe look at it quarterly, according to what Tim and the staff is telling us, is that this data is being collected right now, and we could start looking for trends in 2018 by the middle of the year and start identifying if we're seeing something new or if it's the same thing. So Tommy's already alluded that they're going to meet on this some more. Our recommendation would just be that be a continual process, and we try to get ahead of this so that we're not rushed trying to make recommendations at one meeting before it goes forward. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim, an illness versus an accident, to me, it would be good to know, especially in regard, a sprained ankle won't kill you, or a broken leg won't kill you, but cancer can. To me, it's, or any kind of serious illness, in terms of how you report it and how you deal with it. I understand it's all, workers' comp claim, but it's not just about filing a workers' comp claim. It's trying to resolve the issue, and that is to keep people safer, live longer. They don't have to die, 45 or 50 years old. It seemed like you could do a better job of education, or however you want to call it, like Chief Wisco alluded to.
Certainly, the education side is not the challenge here, other than time and resources for us to pull things together and get right. It out there. Other than that, and that's not a huge issue. We can do that. I think a lot of the conversation that here really has to do with what we're gathering, how we're gathering it, perhaps, and what we're authorized to gather. I know I've said this before to you all, that when you begin talking about things like illness, and these are important issues for the fire service. Don't get me wrong. These are exceedingly important issues for the fire service. Regarding what we're doing specifically to try to help address this, there are all kinds of things that begin factoring in when you're talking about medical conditions and illnesses that may result from occupational hazards. You now have
HIPAA law that comes into play. You got to make sure that that's covered. We got to, and again, I would say as long as you all are comfortable that we're on sure footing regarding what we're authorized to require, and that's what we're really talking about here. What are you comfortable requiring from fire departments? Right now, we are getting some cancer reporting. It is voluntary. There is a big step when you now say that you are going to require them to submit that information. If we're authorized to do it, and if you're comfortable doing it, the gentleman sitting next to me, I'm sure, would be a huge help in this. As far as determining whether we're on safe ground doing that sort of thing. You know, and so I think that discussion needs to happen.
One thing I am interested in, because I remember we talked about this a year ago, and we brought all this up, and we talked to the workers' comp folks, and I remember they were having some issues with coding and tracking all the data. Do we get specific information from Department of Insurance about workers' comp claims filed by fire protection personnel?
No.
So, I mean, that's one of the other points, too, is you see in A of the statute that that's information that we should be getting and sharing, and we're not getting it from the other agency, and so we need to work with them. And I remember talking to them on the phone, and they have a very complex system with a lot of different claims, and it's very hard to trace them all because sometimes claims for cancer go through insurance if the person is retired, and sometimes they go through workers' comp if they made the claim earlier and relates back, that type of thing. And also they have to trace it to particular employers, and then they have to trace more specifically to the particular personnel who works at that employer to make sure it is fire protection personnel. So I remember them having a very complicated and cumbersome system, but at the same time, like Tim's saying, we're not getting that information that we could get that would help us. And if the firefighters are already applying through workers' comp there, that means they have the data. We just need to get it from them. I don't know if it's easier to make a separate requirement for the same data on our end when we're, like Tim said, that is a lot of burdens on us in terms of managing all that information correctly. But at the same time, we might be able to do that, or we can go back to the Department of Insurance and say, look, guys, you know, we really need to get this hammered out. I realize your system's difficult. You have all these things, but what can we do? So I think we should look at all the options and figure out what is the best, considering our resources in your plan. To me, I think we should go back under A and try to work with them, but I remember they had a lot of difficulties.
Is there any problem getting that information from the department?
Early on, when this statute first passed, and again, this is secondhand now because I wasn't involved in those discussions, but what I understand is that when this statute was first adopted, that the agency went to TDI and met with TDI in an attempt to see what kind of information we could draw from them, and apparently it was impractical, if not impossible, to get any really usable information because of the way they capture it. And I think perhaps an example would be, you know, they get an injury that had occurred in the city of whatever, but perhaps it's not obvious whether it was an injury from the fire department, an injury in the fire department.
No, I'm saying, is there any problem us getting it from the fire department?
From the
through
fire
our
department.
Reporting
I'm sorry,
system.
I thought you meant from the
no,
from TDI.
Just do it the simple way. Let the fire departments report it.
I would agree. It becomes even more incumbent upon us to do our own reporting if we can't rely on that other information that's being sent through
accurate.
A different channel.
Just do
at
it.
Least we're ensured that we're capturing something, and it's not getting lost in the gray.
So which information are you talking about?
Talking
maybe I'm
about
not understanding.
Just fire department ABC says, yes, we had Charlie that had, or don't even give a name, but we had one firefighter with cancer and report it through the...
You're asking, could we do that? We're doing that now,
yeah,
point it's voluntary.
But so is there any problem us requiring that to be reported?
That's not a call for me to make. I'm going to implement whatever decision is
okay.
made.
Okay. I would suggest that we check that out and bring it back and put it on an agenda item for the next meeting to discuss requiring that or not.
Okay. We can discuss that in closed session at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, Commissioners, Jim Reedy for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Before the discussion happened, but still, one way or the other, we should be getting cancer reporting, and it should be mandatory. And if we have to go, my recommendation would be to put it on the report as a recommendation that, in some fashion, that cancer and the statutory requirements, the presumptive illnesses are the contagious diseases, cancer, MI, and stroke. That should all be mandatory reporting. If the legislature has determined that those are important enough to presume that the firefighter encountered those in his job, then I would think we'd want to capture that information. Firefighter with cancer, firefighter that got an MI, cardiac. I would think that that's important enough for us to cancer on a mandatory basis, because I know there's been this discussion about illness versus injury. So
I think you would have to, you know, you'd have to know what the applicant's job was. Did he come from a West Virginia coal mine, you know, for 10 years before he became a firefighter, and therefore he's got lung cancer, you know, even though he never smoked in his life? You know, anything that, you know, were you in the Navy and did you have deal with asbestos every day for 3 years and that kind of stuff? In other words, is it fire-related or was it pre-existing or didn't show up, but it was a result of the
pre-existing? I'm pretty sure that's covered in the statute already, the presumptive statute.
But, I mean, that's the type of thing, to be accurate, you would almost have to know that.
That would be up to the department, I would think, to determine that.
Commissioner? On 607.055, it states a firefighter or emergency medical technician who suffers from cancer resulting in death or total or partial disability is presumed to have developed the cancer during the course or scope of employment as a firefighter or emergency medical technician. So if you're on the job as a firefighter and you have cancer and it's picked up by the works coming out, it's presumed you got it by firefighting.
And there's some exclusions. There are some exclusions in the law, but...
But I got skin cancer. You know, I have skin cancer as in, you know, mid 40s, 50s all up. But where did I get that? Because I was a lifeguard at age 16 and got cooked, you know, summer after summer after summer. Did that have anything to do with my skin cancer? You bet it did. But it didn't show up for 20, 30 years.
I don't know what to tell you, but
I mean, it's the same principle is what I'm saying, is that
our incidence of cancer across the board is so much higher than the general public's, mm-hmm. and at a younger age. That's why all this stuff was put together, the presumptive laws and everything that we're doing. Our incidence of skin cancer, as an example, from firefighting, is so much higher just because of what you absorb into your skin on the job. So all I'm saying is that regardless of if you do it here as a commission or we need to go to the legislature and do it, there should be mandatory reporting.
Okay. So, basically, this is where we're at. We're trying to make a decision as a commission. Do we require this information or do we leave it as voluntary? Okay, on, I guess, illnesses, cancer reporting. Do we require them to report it or do we leave it voluntary?
And I think
that's what we need to determine. Not whether it's, you know, I mean, yes, it's going to be good, and we're just putting out information is what we're doing.
And understanding that at this point that wouldn't be a decision you'd want to make now, and
right.
Of course, you can, if you wish, go into closed session. If it's something you want to discuss.
I think you would need to put it on the next agenda and let legal do some background work.
I don't think it's actionable items today because we're looking at recommendations based off of trends in the 2017 report. That's the recommendations we're looking at making. What changes do we make? Not what are we changing next year's report.
Right. What I'm really hoping to hear from y'all today is any kind of recommendation that you want to make to the fire service regarding what you see in the injuries that are happening around the state. Are there any recommendations you want to make to all the departments out there?
I hear any possible action?
If we're going to make a decision, I sure would like to know, other than just nine people's opinion on something, I'd like to.
We don't have that kind of time.
No, I don't mean today. I mean in the future, if we're going to.
Yeah.
Table it until October.
We can't table it until October. It has to be submitted to the, by state law, it has to be August 31st to the state fire marshal.
The report does, but our recommendations.
What about recommendations as well?
Well, the recommendations should be part of the report. Well, that's how we've managed it up till now. They're included in the report. It becomes the last page of the report, if you will.
I don't ever recall the, maybe I'm wrong, help me out, us doing that. I thought that was done by staff.
Well, we can certainly come up with recommendations based upon what we see, but the report really is belongs to y'all. So.
Oh, I understand.
We have in the past made suggestions as recommendations, and y'all adopted them. But I just want to make sure that y'all have the opportunity based on the information you do see in there. If there's something that jumps out at you that you think, you know, we really need to mention this to the fire service, say, you know, departments, y'all need to be paying more attention to such and such, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that, you know, a recommendation related to the 17 report would specifically include how do we get that report out to the general, to the public, not to the public, but to our constituents, to the fire services, to the fire chiefs, and how we get that out. Quarterly updates are something we could have from the 2018 report moving forward for maybe fall quarter or fourth quarter. We could do those reports like you're talking about, but maybe a recommendation would include, getting this current 2017 report as finalized today, eventually here in a little bit, in the hands of the people that need to look at it. And that's the fire chiefs, whether we could, another recommendation would to evaluate CE requirements for some type of review of the 2017 report or all seven or eight reports as a collaborative effort between 2013 through 2017 report, looking at five-year trends, analysis, and that type of thing between multi-year reports. So I think that that's some of the recommendations we could look at and say that's, you know, that's a recommendation that we're looking for. How do we get it in the hands of people? How do we require folks to look at it? And then third, how do we look at maybe a CE hours related to a collaboration of all the reports put together and to look at trends and analysis?
I'll add to that just a little bit. If I remember from the workshop yesterday, you set our current participation rates at 88% of the regulated departments. So maybe some emphasis on that other 12% that haven't yet come to the table and bought in on why their information is so important to the overall scope of this report. I mean, we're all in this together. This stuff's not just affecting the 88% that are reporting. So I don't know how you do that. If you single them out and try some type of one-way or some type of communication directly targeted at them, I don't know, but something to get them to come to the table and provide their information. Whether they have no information, at least let us know that.
Tim, do you have all the department heads, all the head of the department's email?
Yeah.
So you could do a blanket, send the report as a blanket?
We could, but actually what we were doing, we were going one step beyond that. We were our compliance officers, based on those original results in the first draft where it had the lower participation rate, we produced a list of departments that we hadn't heard from, and our compliance officers were actually contacting them individually to
get them involved.
Ask them to.
But I was going more in lines with what Joey was saying of sending those reports, the 2017 reports to all.
Oh, you're just talking about sending the reports. Oh, I thought you were still.
No.
Oh, you were
I was going in that angle.
We can.
Well, a link on our website where they can get it?
Well, they can,
it's
already
there.
Can already do that.
A link to it. It's like an email that you've done giving them the report or access to the report.
We could.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with it.
Ready for motion? I'll give it a shot. We can move forward. Move to submit the 2017 firefighter injury report to the state fire marshal with the following recommendations to include clarification of descriptions and definitions with the injury report. Include updates and public service announcements on trends and injuries to the fire service, as well as increase capability of reports and trends in reports to the fire service, specifically head of departments, through either Facebook posts, emails, or public websites.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. And I'm not going to try to reiterate.
No.
Any further discussion?
Last comment, I would agree with the other commissioners. I would like to see this post an agenda placement for the next October meeting to address the requirement of presumptive illness list as part of the injury reporting. And prior to that meeting, have our general counsel review our authority, lack thereof, or provided authority or explicit authority to require that. That's just comment. So.
Discussion on the motion. We have a motion on the floor.
I did.
I didn't hear it. Okay. Oh, one more comment. If you would, who seconded my motion?
I did.
If you would, Commissioner reminded me that on my first stab at it, I mentioned that to evaluate, have staff evaluate the necessity for including CE hours toward review of the of the plan. So
I agree.
Of the report.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you. You reminded me that was important.
Yeah, let's take about a 10-minute break. We will
turn your mics off.
We'll take a break.
All right, I want to call. Everybody turn their mics back on, please.
Mm-hmm. We're good.
I call this meeting back in session at 10:37.
Item 12, discussion and possible action request from Chief Danny Kistner regarding the appointment of an ad hoc committee on health and wellness.
Commissioners, Director Redley, good morning. Thank you once again for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. I think this discussion is pretty apropos considering the last discussion we just had. And if you will indulge me, I'm here today to ask you to consider and create a separate and distinct health and wellness committee to provide information and recommendations reporting directly to you related specifically to firefighter health and wellness issues. I believe you are allowed to take this action under 419. I often speak of how proud I am of the commitment of to firefighter safety from the Commission and all the Texas Fire Service stakeholders. I also speak of what I like to describe as a renaissance in today's fire service, an academic renaissance, if you will, in that we are learning so much more now about all aspects of the industry that, quite frankly, it's about time. So much has changed. That's evident by your past discussion just a few moments ago. I've been in the fire service for 35 years. I recall my first weeks of rookie school and being told that firefighters live about 10 years less than the general population. It's just an occupational hazard. We accepted that as a matter of course and just simply said that's okay. That's how it was. We did not question why, and I would argue we even embraced that fact for the public empathy that we expected. We fought training fires most often without benefit of SCBA, and after applying accelerants to hay, like diesel and jet fuel, as wells, who knows what. It's usually a local chemical company trying to get rid of something, and we pour it on the hay and burn it and make pretty colors. We were told that firefighting is a physically demanding job and that firefighters should be considered athletes. Maintain your physical fitness. We were told we would see things, but the expectation was that we were the responders and we could handle all the trauma and emotional stressors and had better not show weakness or emotion lest one be considered inferior. For those of you here with equal or more time on the job, tell me I'm wrong. But the warning signs were there. We didn't ask why. The reasons for this are many and can probably be summed up in the culture of the fire service. This is a fire service that I loved then and I love just as much now, and I was an equal contributor through blind compliance. I was enamored with the identity of being a firefighter and the social equity that comes with that identity, and therefore I was part of the problem. Pinnacle events are those moments that have dramatic impact on our lives, and mine is no different. I'll spare you my story, save this, the words from my wife after sharing a particularly harrowing event one day. And those words were, "I don't want to raise our children alone." That hit me like a ton of bricks, and immediately I reevaluated my attitude. Not always on the popular side, I continually ask why on everything. And what can we do to make our job better? And what can we do to make our job safer? We accepted a lifespan less than the general population without asking why. Deep down, we knew why. Exposure to the products of combustion. This was 1983. We chose to ignore it as simply part of the job. Academia, however, has been talking to us. And academia published a text in 1990 called In the Mouth of the Dragon. And it was about the dangers of fighting fires involving plastics and synthetics. Academia was speaking to us, but the fire service largely ignored that. Academia and anecdotal experience is now telling us that firefighter cancer is fact. NIOSH reported a 9% increase in firefighter cancer diagnosis and 14% increase in firefighter cancer death. The problem is we do not know how many firefighters are impacted nationally or locally. Only 14 cases were voluntarily reported to the Texas Commission through the Injury Reporting Program in 2016 and 10 in 2017. We know there are many more. We also know the contributing factors. Last year, NFPA reported 93 firefighter line of duty deaths. The statistics remain largely the same, with the majority related to cardiovascular disease and medical issues. Year after year, the ratios are consistent. Yet, not all firefighters receive an annual physical. Alcohol, tobacco, obesity still plague the fire service and confound injury and death risk. Not reported in line-of-duty death reports, however, were the 130 firefighter suicides in 2016 nationwide and 103 firefighter suicides in 2017 nationwide. 52 wildland firefighters committed suicide between the 2 years of 2015 and 2016 combined. Firefighter suicide exceeds firefighter line-of-duty death. PTSD is very real, but there is still a stigma associated with emotional distress that is a barrier to firefighters seeking treatment. One recent survey from the Midwest suggests most departments lack mental health safety programs, are unaware that the susceptibility of firefighters to PTSD through multiple and continual exposure to traumatic events is greater than other high-stress occupations. No regulations or law exist to prevent, catch, or monitor PTSD. And current programs are largely reactive as opposed to proactive. I regularly attend commission meetings and listen to audio recordings of the Fire Advisory Board just as often as I can. You have a difficult job sorting through all the issues facing the modern fire service, and every one of us in this room have an opinion, and we all consider ours the correct one. The problem is we address proximate causes of risk, but we do not seem to give greater attention to root cause. We are also not on the same page regarding the health and wellness issues facing the modern fire service. It appears that there is no specific framework for addressing health and wellness issues. Sense making is the collective experience, education, and biological factors that influence our attitudes and beliefs. We all have what we consider our priority issues and how best to address or resolve those issues. I fear this phenomenon hinders resolution in many areas using conventional problem-solving models. Therefore, I recommend the creation of a separate and distinct health and wellness committee chaired by a public member of the Texas Commission and reporting directly to the Commission on issues relative to firefighter health and wellness, such as PTSD, firefighter suicide, firefighter cancer, firefighter physical fitness, and the emerging topic related to firefighters and career-ending injuries. Several Texas fire chiefs are in support of this effort, and specifically, I address the Texas Metro fire chiefs, many represented here today, and they voted to endorse this recommendation. I recommend a conventionally sized committee between 9 and 13 members representing all manner of fire department from all levels of population. Those interested in participating on this committee should be vetted by the commission and display an assignment, education, or experiences that would qualify them to sit on such a committee. Representatives should not be active members of any other commission, board, ad hoc, or standing committee, lest biases impede the mission. The committee should be a permanent committee, meeting as often as necessary, determined by the committee and or the commission. Permanent because we don't know. We don't know what the future issues are going to be. And I urge the commission not to make the mistakes that we've made several decades ago and listen to what the industry is telling us and listen to what academia is telling us. And in short, the committee will be a proactive organization seeking information, establishing cost-neutral partnerships as necessary, and provide reports to the commission on these specific topics so that you're armed with the most up-to-date intelligence that you can get before you make decisions that impact dramatically the Texas Fire Service. And I thank you for your time.
I have a question. Hi, Chief. Thanks for giving us that. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I was wanting to know, do you have like a mission statement? Is there like a mission statement for this committee? Along with your goals that you mentioned, but do you have like, what's the purpose is what I want to know.
The purpose is to provide
information. I
kind of
understand you told us, but
right.
Do you have like a theme purpose for it?
I did not establish one. Usually, the mission statement is a combined effort of committee members and the commission, what your direction is. I'm floating the idea because what I see consistently when I come up here is, and probably I'm characterizing it wrong if I say a piecemeal attack on some of these issues, but it's just what the du jour is. What are we interested in now? And then we may have a year go by or half a year go by or some period of time go by where other pressing issues don't get addressed at all. Cancer, rightfully so, is at the forefront right now, but we seem to be missing the mark on cardiovascular. 50% of all firefighter fatalities are still related to cardiovascular disease, yet we didn't really talk about that today. And also related to cancer are firefighter physicals and early detection and prevention efforts and such as that, and we're focusing on reporting it, which that's important too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to downplay anything. But it's like we're piecemealing our how we address these issues as opposed to let's get a group together. That's their focus. That's their assignment. That's all they look at. Fire Advisory Board is way too busy to put this on their plate as well. And let them come up, these other individuals come up with a particular plan. I'm sorry, sir, did that help?
Appreciate it.
And there's a number of fire chiefs in the audience today, sir. I don't know if they would like to comment on this as well, but there's some from the Metro chiefs that are present and some others that are in support of this recommendation.
Discussion? Any further questions?
One more, Mr. Chairman. So this committee would be more or less educating?
Yes.
It would be education as well?
Yes, sir.
For the departments around Texas?
Well, primarily for the commission, and then however the commission sees fit. Yes, sir.
Chief Kistner, would you quickly outline what your recommendation of the makeup of the committee was one more time on your...
The number is, I don't want to say it was arbitrary, but sure. A good number for committee members is between 9 and 13, and I kind of took that from government committees.
And you said one of the chair members would be a commissioner? Is that what you...
I did, and I recommended a public member, a public commissioner. Okay. Yes. Somebody not associated with the fire service. And I mentioned that because, as stated, myself included, we all have, in the fire service, we all have biases. And a public member is less likely to have a bias towards something.
You would have the ad hoc committee report directly to the commission?
Yes, sir.
But any recommendations related to rule changes, as you're aware, would have to go through the advisory committee first?
Yes, sir. Okay.
I don't think so. I think we have the authority to form any ad hoc committee.
No, I meant any rule changes that they brought to us from that committee after it was established.
That would still have to go through the advisory committee.
Yes. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll entertain a motion that this commission appoint an ad hoc committee related to health and wellness as described by Chief Danny Kistner, with the presiding officer to appoint the chairman of that committee.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to create a health and wellness committee with the chairman being appointed by the chair of the commission. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Any discussion?
So the committee that Commissioner Anderson chairs, I guess I assume that's kind of what they were, health, wellness, injury reporting.
Yeah, I think the committee, though, that committee was to look at the injury and illness report. Their specific duties was looking at the injury and illness report and determining what we could do, what changes we needed to make it better for the members out across. It wasn't a standing committee.
I would concur that that's what my opinion of that committee was as well. And I think this committee would have more ability to look at the potential for significant recommendations, whether they're mandatory or voluntary, and then even to that point make recommendations to the advisory committee on rule changes as necessary as well down the future.
Any further discussion?
Jody, on your recommendations, are you recommending that it be a permanent or a temporary?
Permanent ad hoc committee, just as similar to we have all the other ad hoc committees related to firefighter investigation, hazmat, inspector, similar to those ad hoc committees that we already have in place that are permanent ad hoc committees.
Yeah, standing committee.
Standing committee. JP, you look like you had
it. So one of your comments was that the person couldn't be a member of any other committee, board, commission, correct?
Right. And that was to help eliminate bias, outside influence. This committee is focused on one thing. That's it. And whatever comes of that, the recommendations follows the usual chain, but not to influence the committee.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
All right.
Next item.
Item 13, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 421, standards for certification.
The firefighter just got weakened.
Mr. Chairman, that we've included these rules, this rule language in here. I think this was to give, I believe, Commissioner McMakin an opportunity to present whatever their findings were from their meeting they had.
From the committee?
Right.
Meeting that they had. Commissioner McMakin?
Pat McAuliffe presented a report that I gave to you regarding that. I guess I was a little bit the results were that the education and the firefighter advisory committee did not want any change from where they it was that and I have a written report that I can turn in, but that's essentially the outcome of our meeting.
Okay, so we're talking in terms of term limitations and that.
Correct, for both committees, so treat everybody equally. And as it presently stands, the commission can change anybody that they want to, but it was also being realistic about it, unless they robbed a bank or did something audacious, that nobody was ever going to rule against any individual unless something pretty horrendous. And so I just I thought perhaps that in terms of we had 53 applicants for the vacant chair or committee position and all like that. That spoke to me in so much that there was a lot of interest in doing this. I realize that there is turnover, and they mentioned that, but to a person, that they were diametrically opposed to making any change whatsoever.
Okay. Your committee that you chaired.
Correct.
On this. Okay. What is y'all's recommendation? What's the committee's recommendation?
They don't want to do anything. I mean, that was the recommendation of the majority of the people that were participatory.
Okay.
At this time.
Make a motion that we move forward on item number 13 and not take action and leave that in.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second? Okay, the motion is to move forward on 13 and not take action, leave the current rules in place as is, correct? Okay, discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you for chairing that committee, Chief.
Yep. Okay, 14.
Item 14, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 429, minimum standards for fire inspector certification.
Okay, before I open this up for discussion, I want to read a letter received from House Representative Drew Springer. I have a copy for each of you, each commissioner. But I want to read this into record. It's addressed Representative Drew Springer, District 68. It's addressed to Robert Moore, Presiding Officer, Texas Commission on Fire Protection. Mr. Moore, for the past two legislative sessions,
I filed a bill that would have waived the formal inspector certification requirements of counties under 250,000 due to the lack of official inspectors to perform safety inspections of public facilities, such as public schools. House Bill 3221-83R and House Bill 1233-84R. A few weeks ago, while the Public Education Committee was addressing safety issues, schools facing the lack of inspections was again brought to light. With Chairman Hubert E. Commenting that this legislation needs to address the issue. Specific first responder groups oppose the legislation. Both bills failed to receive a hearing, let alone a vote, in the Texas House of Representatives. My understanding, after talking with these various groups, is that they now see the benefit of my legislation and would like a waiver system for inspections. These inspections are very basic and consist of a fire exit review plan, fire alarms, and no immediate open dangers. Certified volunteer firefighters can perform these safety inspections, and in fact, before 2009, certified volunteer firefighters performed these inspections competently on a regular basis. Under current law, rural Texas must wait to bring a certified fire marshal or fireman to have these inspections done. The current inspection system often results in inspections never being conducted, even though these communities have available and qualified volunteer firemen at their disposal. Therefore, I would encourage you and the Commission to be supportive of some waiver system that would allow certified volunteer firefighters in rural communities to perform needed safety inspections to keep their communities safe. A one-size-all approach has been tried and failed in Texas, and a multi-certification level must be put back in place. Thank you for your service to the state, which I know is strictly voluntary, and for diligently trying to make our state a safer place. And it's signed Drew Springer, state representative. On top of this letter, I received a couple of phone calls yesterday afternoon, also from Representative Springer, to discuss this letter. And basically, he brought up the same thing, that we need to relook at how we do inspections or the certification process for inspectors in the state of Texas. He also stated that, you know, he didn't want to, I guess, take this to legislature this year. He wanted to give us an opportunity to fix it. It's our responsibility. He stated he thought that it would be the best thing for the fire service and the state of Texas if we, as a commission, can fix our problem here. Now, for several years, let's say that, we have been dealing with this topic, okay, and it's back on the agenda again. I want to make a motion before we ever open up discussion that the chair creates an ad hoc committee made up of three commissioners, three advisory board members that also represent the different
group, service groups out there in the commission.
Oh, here we go.
And take a hard look at this, because I don't think that the current language that was going to be presented today really addresses the issue. Okay, if I remember correctly, this is morphed into something that is not the way it started. So my motion would be to table this topic, create a committee, an ad hoc committee with advisory board members and commissioners, and try to come up with a plan that meets everybody's needs and present that in October. Now I will. Oh, do I hear a second?
Second.
Have a second. I'll open it up for comments. Any discussion?
You're correct. This has morphed into something that I don't think was intended when it was first brought to the commission a couple of years ago. It went from everything from company officer level inspection to taking care of 419-909 to code enforcement. Went from a 40-hour class to an 80-hour class, and it has this one issue has split the fire service just about 50-50 down the middle. This commission has looked at, and we look at it every day, on increasing our training levels. Had a department, we went over that about 3 years ago, where we increased the education levels for head of department. And then when this came up, we had backlash that we were actually decreasing the requirement for fire inspectors, which was never the issue or the intent. Let me say that. The intent was to allow for a training and certification of fire company officers to do safety inspections. And that 419 would have to be handled through legislation. It would have to be amended through legislation. So this commission and subcommittee, ad hoc committee, needs to look at creating a separate certification that can do your mom and pop stores, your strip centers, the things that are not required by 419, and do actual fire code enforcement. And that way you have your inspectors that have all three levels of certifications, frees them up and gives them time to do the ones that are mandated by 419. And that's, I think, what you're asking of this ad hoc committee, is it not?
Yes.
I'm all for that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mike Quisco, Firefighter Advisory Committee. Mr. Chairman, we welcome this fresh approach. Echo everything that Commissioner Toyle has said, and let's get back down to the root of the issue and try to find some resolution where we can. I think we can find something that's productive and beneficial. I don't think we should rush it. I think this committee would take a good hard look at that and bring something back to you all, and then we can move forward from there. Hopefully we don't put too stern of a deadline on it, but we need to address it, but I don't think we want to rush it. That's just my two cents.
Okay. Any other?
I'm second to the motion, mainly for discussion, and I think that one of the things that I'd like to see the ad hoc committee also do is to look clearly and define as much as we can, even if we need general counsel to assist us in defining 419-909 and how we feel that lays out. 419-909 is fire safety inspection state statute related to, you know, local fire code. Fire codes adopted by state, city, county by local law, rule, or regulation or ordinance. How that lays out based off of what we've presented in the past is a statement from the commission on what pre-planning means, what a safety inspection means, what a fire inspection means. I think we've gotten confusion over the last 6-7 years of what that really means. What's a pre-plan? What's a safety inspection? I mean, that's not even a definition of that. What's a true fire inspection based off of what 419-909 states, and maybe looking at general counsel as part of that ad hoc committee's responsibility as well.
Call for the question.
Question has been called. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Do I have public comment on that?
Well,
do you want to have public comment?
Yeah, do I have any public comment that would like to
please
give public comment?
Hi, I'm Laurie Christensen, President of Texas Fire Marshals Association. I just wanted to be clear. We, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, which obviously the majority of our members are inspectors, we are not on the advisory committee, so I would just ask that we at least consulted, or if we could have a member, be on the committee, that we'd be more than happy to and willing to work with you. Thank you very much.
Any other comments?
15.
All right. Thank you. Next item.
Item 15. Discussion and possible action on the petition for rulemaking filed by the International Code Council requesting changes to 37 TAC Chapter 429, minimum standards for fire inspector. Possible actions the commission may take include but are not limited to denying the petition for rulemaking or initiating a rulemaking proceeding concerning 37 TAC Chapter 429.
Commissioners, you've got a letter included in your notebook there. This letter actually had been submitted to us several months ago, a couple of meetings back, and it really just kind of got lost in the shuffle with all of the discussion about 429 and what to do with 429. But it's something that you do need to address one way or the other, essentially. And what their proposal is here in the letter, if you look at their second page, the back there, you'll see that it really was dependent upon the proposed rule language that you just tabled. In essence, they were kind of drawing from that, because that was what they were working from 6 months ago when they brought this to us. Again, in a nutshell, what they were looking for is consideration be given that would allow the way it is now currently, in the current inspector certification, someone who brings IFSAC seals to us, we accept that testing process and allow that person to apply for certification. TEKS Pro Board credential, that test process is also accepted towards certification. They're asking that ICC credential be considered at the same level. And you see that if you look at the proposed language on the second page there, 429.3, that first section, you'll see that you have a capital, number one, A, B, and then C is their request, if you will.
Is there a recommendation by staff related to this, and are there any issues related to certifications you see on
I would say that the historically the the system in place for accepting a test for certification with no other requirements was I can say, very hard fought with the Teeks Pro Board, adding Teeks Pro Board. For many, many years, it was IFSAC only. And after much, much discussion, the board chose to allow a second testing process. I can say right now, I don't have nearly enough information to say whether I would recommend choosing this particular process at the same level that I would IFSAC or Teeks Pro Board. I could not recommend that based on what I know at this point.
If I remember right, when we did that, they had to get TPAs and all that. And that was the question. Commissioner Gonzalez's, would it interfere with IFSAC? We had a pretty big process.
It is.
Essentially, we would have no say or anything in their testing process.
Right. What is being asked for here is that if ICC credentials were presented to us, we would issue state certification based on that.
Would there be an opportunity to forward this to? Would this be curriculum and testing that would review this and look at that?
It's possible they could. Yeah, it wouldn't hurt to let it go to a committee, and they could do some more research.
And would curriculum and testing be the appropriate committee, or would firefighter advisory?
Well, I think the firefighter advisory committee could do this. It's just a matter of finding out what is entailed in ICC credentialing. And honestly, again, I don't know at this point. I haven't researched it enough to say. I don't know if there's even a test involved with ICC credentialing. I really don't know.
So if we were to more or less take action today to forward this back to staff and curriculum or firefighter advisory to further review the standards and requirements of ICC for certification?
We could certainly do some more research. Yes. I think the recommendation to go to Firefighter Advisory Committee, they can always utilize curriculum and testing as they need to as well.
What process did we use when Teeks brought this same request?
We did an in-depth review of the testing process that Teeks Teeks uses in the Pro Board system that they've been accredited by. You also adopted rules that allow the commission at any time to go in and review that system, should we feel there to be a need to do that. So again, there were several. There were safeguards put in place so that you could be assured that us issuing a state certification based on that particular testing process, that we could still be confident in that process.
But I guess what I'm saying is, did it go to the advisory committee, the request first, and then go through that process, or did that process take place before it was ever sent to the advisory committee?
I believe I'd have to go back and look and see how that all played out. I think the direction was to staff to really go and do a review of the Teeks Pro Board system and bring that before the board for consideration. And once that was done, then obviously the decision was made to propose some rule language that would then address that.
I think that we should follow the same process. I mean, it's the same form of request.
Mike Wisco, Advisory Committee. So for the historical perspective, it was about a 13-year process to accept Pro Board. We certainly take it and look at it. I think you're opening a can of worms that none of us will see the end of. And I think we've got much greater pressing needs based on our last agenda item. I would hate to get bogged down in this while we're trying to work through something a little more necessary and important and addressing something local right now. This is essentially somebody else asking for their credentials to be accepted. I'm going to say it again. I think we've got a pretty good program right now. I think before we start looking to accept somebody else's, let's fix some of our pressing needs here. That's just my two cents, but we'd certainly take a look at it.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't a long process, but it was several certifications and disciplines. And I would recommend that we just send this to testing and curriculum and have them look at the course outlines and curriculum that this ICC has and kind of move along from there.
This may help also. We look at, and the rules allow us to look at, all kinds of training programs mm-hmm. out there to determine whether we would allow someone to challenge our yes. state exam That's process right. based on that training.
That's right.
So, and again, without being real familiar with this, this could fall under that same category anyway, even under our current rules. Without looking at it, I can't say for a fact, but it could. And again, we do that with military training programs, out-of-state programs. We are charged with reviewing training to see if it meets the requirements, the minimum requirements that is laid out in our training program, and if we deem it equivalent, we allow the person to challenge our state exam. We don't automatically issue a state certification based on that. We only have those two.
But that's what they're requesting.
What they're Correct. Requesting is that we would issue state certification without testing. Uh-huh. That's what you're seeing here, at least, anyway. That's their request here.
So I guess that's the determination. Are we comfortable with doing that? Because if we send it to the, testing certification committee to review their curriculum, that still doesn't, I guess, ensure us of their testing process, their test security process, and all of the forms of those things that are required in certification.
We look at their curriculum and course outlines, and it meets up kind of with ours on that, then we can move to the next step. If it doesn't, we're done.
It does. And as I begin visiting this with staff, it's possible that at one point staff has already looked at an ICC program to determine whether a person could challenge our state exam. I can't say at this point. It's possible that's already been done.
I think that's the direction I'd like to see as well, just to testing curriculum evaluate it to see if it meets the availability mm-hmm. to challenge our state test for that purpose.
I'll second that.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we have a motion.
Before we proceed, I just want to try to summarize some of the reasons I've heard here today. It seems like we have a lack of familiarity with the ICC system, and we want to look into it, and that we want to evaluate the ICC system and credentials further before proceeding with rulemaking.
Yes. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So we have a motion and a second to have our curriculum and testing committee review the ICC curriculum to see if it meets our requirements for challenging our exam. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next item.
Discussion and possible 16. Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 449, Head of the Fire Department.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, this one really originates with staff, this proposed language here. And it really does so out of a need to hopefully allow us to better implement the rule language that was adopted. The way the rule language currently exists, it can be pretty confusing to folks out there who are aspiring to be heads of department. It can be difficult to implement at times, depending on the situation that we have with any particular person. So for the most part, really, though, what you're seeing here, with a couple of exceptions that I'll touch on, we're really moving the language that has been struck in 449.3. We're recommending striking that language and moving it to 449.1. And I know that doesn't seem like a huge thing, but essentially these four or five things that you see in 449.3, those are in essence avenues for someone to qualify for head of department. That's really what those are. And the way they've been implemented by staff over the years is we really look for that before we appoint them. We're looking for one of those to be satisfied before we're able to appoint the individual to the duties. For the most part, that's how that's played out. So what we're recommending is moving the language to 449.1, which is where appointment language resides in most of the other mandatory, in all of the other mandatory certification chapters. It really resides in that first section right there.
I got 129.
There was or is a provision in the current language that allows a person who still doesn't quite qualify but would qualify within that first year of appointment to be appointed. That does exist in there. The problem with that language, the way it currently sits, is it's really not realistic to expect someone who qualified with an out-of-state credential somewhere, who gets hired, who has 9.5 years out of state, to come in, to expect them to get their other 6 months via that particular option, if you're following me. Because these are all ors. They have to qualify via one of these. Can't be a combination of any one of these. It has to be via one of those things. So the idea that someone might come from out of state and still be able to qualify with their last 6 months really isn't, it's not realistic to do that. However, we did, when we moved this language up to 449.1, we did preserve that language in number one, because we can track that. Someone who holds our certification, has years of service, be it full-time, 5 years of full-time, or 10 years of part-time, which is actually one of the other options in the current language, then we track that. We're seeing it. In fact, the system is already doing that. So it's easy enough now for us to be able to know whether somebody's going to get their time within that first year of appointment. So again, that's the reason. That would be our recommendation as to why it would be more manageable and I think less confusing to folks out there for us to move the language to its current location. We did the same thing. If you look in subchapter B, we did the same thing for head of a prevention-only department. Same type of a thing. We took that language, moved it into section one. And of course, this is our proposal for publication and comment and review by the Firefighter Advisory Committee, so it can certainly go under lots of scrutiny before anything happens. But
move for publication.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Move for publication. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Tim, this is going to the Firefighter Advisory Committee, right?
Yes, all you just did was you voted to publish it for comment. It will go to the Firefighter Advisory Committee via the regular route. Absolutely.
Next item.
17, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 455, minimum standards for wildland fire protection certification.
Based on the information presented to us, I move for publication.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Move for publication.
This is dates only.
Discussion. Dayton.
That what they did was they combined one of the or to those other two courses into a single course after that date. That's all that does.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 18, discussion and possible action on matters from the Executive Director. A, decisions of the Executive Director and contested cases and consent orders.
Commissioners, nothing to report at this time on that one.
B, status of division functions.
Got some quick overviews there for you to read through. I'll just point out a couple of items. I can tell you in a nutshell that I'm very grateful that my testing staff survived the onslaught of tests that they undertook over the previous couple of quarters. It has been a rough ride for them. It was an amazing volume of testing followed by an incredible volume of certification issuance. When you're looking at the training and approval testing section there, they, in the quarter, the third quarter, they conducted 4,276 exams. A typical quarter is usually in the neighborhood of 2,000 to 2,500 maybe. So there was a huge jump in the number of exams given. And again, that was followed by lots of certifications being issued. We issued 4,441 certificates. Again, typically we're around 2,500 maybe for a quarter for certifications issued. So it has been a very, very busy time for both of those.
Y'all do go out there and beat on the doors or something?
Well, part of it was as a result of the first year of the driver-operator aerial and the mad rush toward the end there, but in my conversations with Joyce, our testing manager, she told me that the interest in certifications is across the board. There's increased interest in all of them, so which is a very good thing, very good sign.
Are IFSAC seals up?
I think they were at least par. I honestly think we'll see increases in those, particularly now that we have online application. It becomes a lot more convenient for them to do that. We're still, one of the things on the list that I talked about yesterday to do is to establish in the FIDO interface for someone when they're looking at applying for things that we remind them about the IFSAC seals right there when they're applying for certification, so that hopefully they'll consider going ahead and applying for those at the same time. But other than that, I'm happy to answer any other questions regarding the report there.
Item 19, does anyone know of anything that we need to go into executive session on? Item 20.
Open session for further discussion and possible action regarding preceding agenda item.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
During the roll call session, Tyvee Whitlock was marked as absent. I just want to make sure I announced, I don't know if all of the commissioners and everyone knows, we will have an opening there. Tyvee Whitlock has submitted her resignation from the commission, effective immediately.
The governor's office.
And she's notified the governor's office also. So there will be an open position. Public member position.
Are you going to take any action on 14? On the committee? Are you going to set up the committee yet? Or do you wait?
You're talking about the advisors? The inspector, I can set that up. I don't have to set that up through the committee, through the meeting. Okay, any other discussion, possible action? Item 21.
21, adjournment of the meeting.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second to adjourn. Commission meeting is adjourned at 11:35 a.m.